Billions of dollars in U.S. aid for Ukraine, delayed by several months as it fights the Russian invasion, is now being released imminently. President Biden has signed the foreign aid bill and spoke a short time ago.
In the next few hours, literally the few hours, we're going to begin sending in equipment to Ukraine for air defense munitions, for artillery, for rocket systems and armored vehicles.
Biden also announced a $1 billion increase in humanitarian aid for Gaza, and he emphasized the U.S. will help replenish Israel's air defenses against future strikes from Iran. Taiwan is another recipient of the foreign aid bill to the tune of $8 billion in defense aid. NPR's Emily Fang reports China is not pleased.
China, which considers Taiwan its territory, said the Taiwan aid bill sent, quote, the wrong signal by deepening military collusion between Taiwan and the U.S. and tacitly supporting Taiwanese independence. Taiwan's foreign ministry, defense ministry, thanked U.S. Congress for the funding, saying it showed ongoing U.S. commitment to help Taiwan defend itself against Chinese intimidation and influence campaigns. The $8 billion that would go to Taiwan includes nearly $2 billion for weapons maintenance and training for Taiwanese troops. Much of the rest of the amount would then fund the Taiwanese Navy and its submarine program. Emily Fang, NPR News, Taipei, Taiwan.
The Supreme Court is considering another abortion case today, drawing dueling protesters, both pro- and anti-abortion rights.
Abortion is out there. We want it out.
The Biden administration argues federal law allows hospitals to provide abortions during pregnancy-related health emergencies. Idaho says it must be a life or death situation for the mother. NPR's Selena Simmons-Duffin reports.
Three maternity wards in Idaho have shut down since the abortion law took effect. OBGYN Sarah Thompson of Boise says one reason, 58 OBs have left the state.
And in that same time period, only two OBGYNs moved into Idaho.
Dr. Jim Souza of St. Luke's Health System spoke to reporters last week.
They're not willing to take the risk to go to jail and lose their license for practicing medicine.
Idaho defends its abortion law and says the Biden administration is trying to use a federal law about emergency care to create a national abortion mandate. Selena Simmons-Duffin, NPR News.
House Speaker Mike Johnson is calling for the president of Columbia University to resign. Johnson is visiting campus today to address charges of anti-Semitism stemming from student protests against the war in Gaza. The school says it's negotiating with protesters to clear out an encampment, with some classes being held online amid student safety concerns. This is NPR News. New consumer protection rules issued by the Biden administration are requiring airlines to issue refunds on majorly delayed flights. The Transportation Department is also requiring airlines to disclose baggage fees up front. Tesla CEO Elon Musk says unforeseen challenges caused Tesla's profits to drop by 55%. He told investors the future is still electric and autonomous. NPR's Camila Domonoske reports he is also relying on robo-taxis.
Currently, Teslas need someone attentive at the wheel, even in so-called full self-driving mode. But for years, Musk has promised a world where they pick up passengers, no supervision needed.
In my view, this would be much like elevators. Elevators used to be operated by a guy with a relay switch.
Tesla also said that a revolutionary new manufacturing process will only be used for robo-taxis, not cheap vehicles like first promised. When analysts on the call tried to ask Musk about what this means for the prospect of a $25,000 vehicle, the CEO brushed off the question, saying the key to Tesla's future is autonomy. Camila Domonoske, NPR News.
A surreal sight in London today when soldiers failed to hold their horses and five runaway horses from the army galloped through the streets, alarming and injuring people, damaging vehicles, and turning the morning commute into a horse race. The animals were rehearsing for a royal pageant when they panicked, apparently from construction noise, and threw off their riders. Police say a few miles and a short time later, all the horses were recovered, evaluated, and returned to their barracks. This is NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Fisher Investments. Fisher is committed to helping clients stay on track to reach their financial goals and enjoy a comfortable retirement. FisherInvestments.com. Investing in securities involves the risk of loss.
I could say something snide about horses here, but I won't. I will merely say good afternoon to you. It is Wednesday, April the 24th. I am Scott. You are you. We are together for Noon Hour Magazine. No horses involved for the next 53 minutes or so with all the information you need. Here are your local news stories.
Pocahontas County Commissioners held a special session on Thursday, April the 18th, meeting with members of the Pocahontas County Solid Waste Authority and with members of the Fertig family regarding the purchase of the county landfill, which the Solid Waste Authority has been leasing from Renee Heretic Hill. The Solid Waste Authority members and the commissioners both agreed that after the landfill reaches its capacity and closes in about 2 years, the authority will financially need the commission to purchase the landfill in order to be able to continue to provide trash disposal using a transfer station built on that site. Fertig Hill and the commissioners agreed that $129,900 would be a fair price for the landfill. And both parties agreed that the recently surveyed boundaries of the 40.6 acres were acceptable. The remaining issue was who would pay to build the fence around the three sides of the 40.6 acre tract, which is required by the West Virginia Department of the Environment, or DOE, as well as another fence to run on both sides of the 1/2 mile long roadway through the Fertig farm to the site. Fertig Hill and her relatives said that fence along the state-maintained roadway is absolutely needed to protect her cattle from the vehicular traffic that will be traveling to and from the transfer station. It was determined that the fence around the landfill property will cost $24,307.50, and an additional $19,900 will be required to construct a fence along both sides of the roadway. Commissioner Walker was willing to pay Fertig Hill $24,307.50 for her to build the fence around the landfill by adding that amount to the purchase price, but he insisted that the Solid Waste Authority pay for the fence along the roadway. The commissioners voted to pay Fertig Hill $129,900 for the property plus the $24,307.50 for her to have the fence built around the landfill property, for a total of $154,207.50. The commissioner said it is easier for Fertig Hill to build that fence than for the commission to have to go through the complicated process of bidding that job out. Ed Raleigh, chairman of the Solid Waste Authority, said they had already offered to build the fence along one side of the road if Fertig Hill would build the fence along the other side of the road, but the authority will still need to formally approve that at their next meeting. Fertig Hill indicated that the commission's offer appears to be acceptable to her. Regarding the post-closure cost of monitoring the water at the landfill and of maintaining the cap for 30 years, Mary Clendenin said they have revised down the estimated annual cost of that from $75,000 per year to $50,000. The commissioners indicated they might also be willing to help with that cost, as well as with some of the future costs operating the transfer station, since it is in the best interests of the citizens of the county that the cost of garbage disposal remain as reasonable as possible. Tim Walker, Allegheny Mountain Radio News.
If you are wanting to participate in this year's Great Greenbrier River Race, I'm afraid you're too late, according to the race website, as registration has already closed for the race scheduled for April 27th. But if you're just wanting to watch a fantastic race with highly competitive athletes, you're more than welcome to take in the festive atmosphere that will be happening in Marlinton this Saturday. Race organizer Robin DeMarkey gives us a rundown of the course for the race, which includes running, kayaking, and biking.
They start in front of the Presbyterian Church there on 8th Avenue. We have a timing company that comes and brings a big arch, and everything's done electronically. And they run up to the trail, and they take a left on the trail, which would be heading north towards Cass. Okay. And they run a mile and a half, turn around, and come back. So it's a three-mile run.
If you're a solo racer, you can proceed directly to the next phase of the race, a four-mile kayak paddle down to Buckeye.
If you're on a team, they exchange the ankle bracelet there in front of the Presbyterian Church, and then they go to their kayaks, which is very cool for people to watch, because there'll be 270 kayaks lined up there. And then they head to Buckeye, and then they get out at Buckeye, and they have their bike stationed at Buckeye. They head south on the trail for 3 miles, turn around and come back into town, and it's a 10-mile bike ride.
Despite recent rains, DeMarkey says the kayak portion of the race could be challenging.
It'll be tricky. There'll be some rocks to avoid because it's probably going to be under 3 feet.
What's the optimum level?
You know, it can just vary. I mean, we've had it at 2.5, which is barely doable. I think one year we did it at 6 feet, and that was extremely fast. If I could wish for everybody, what it would probably be 3.5 or 4 feet.
Spectators have a chance to join the racers for dinner Friday night before the big race.
This year, Rivertown, the cafe's hosting a pasta dinner, which the community can come to if they want to. It's $16 at the door. And then we're having a band that night, Soda Pop Gypsies. The pasta dinner's from 5 to 7, and then Soda Pop starts, and they're from 7 to 9.
Over 370 racers are registered to participate in this year's race. Proceeds from the Great Greenbrier River Race benefit the Greenbrier River Trail Association for maintenance and repair of the trail. The meeting for racers is at 10:30 a.m. Saturday, and the Great Greenbrier River Race will begin at 11 a.m. For Allegheny Mountain Radio News, I'm Heather Nyday.
This is Britt Chambers with an Allegheny Mountain Radio News Nugget. Attorney for the Highland County Volunteer Rescue Squad, Jordan K. Bowman, Esquire, of Litton and Sipe in Harrisonburg, released the following statement to local media on April 23, 2024. Quote, "For over 60 years, the members of the Highland County Volunteer Rescue Squad have been honored to provide emergency medical services throughout the county. The volunteers were extremely disappointed with the action by the Board of Supervisors on April 11th, revoking their authority to operate in the county. The board violated state law concerning the regulation of emergency medical services and failed to provide the community with a meaningful opportunity to provide input before taking action. Earlier today, the volunteers filed a lawsuit requesting that the board's decision be declared void due to numerous legal deficiencies. The volunteers have also asked for a preliminary injunction that will allow them to resume operations while the lawsuit is pending. Otherwise, the emergency medical services available in the county will likely be insufficient in circumstances where a slight delay may mean the difference between life and death. Over the course of a half century, the volunteers have formed valued relationships from helping friends and neighbors who suddenly find themselves in a time of urgent need. The volunteers hope that today's filings represent the first step towards resuming a vital role in the community that has spanned generations." End quote.
The Pocahontas County Opera House is a supporter of Allegheny Mountain Radio, a 250-seat historic theater located in Marlinton, West Virginia. The Pocahontas County Opera House Foundation presents an annual performance series of both local and international musicians, theater groups, and other performers. More information is available at PocahontasOperaHouse.org.
Currently 59 degrees in Monterey. I'm going to need about 10 more degrees on that. Thank you very much. Mostly sunny today. Highs in the upper 50s to low 60s. Winds 10 to 15, gusting up to 30. Tonight, partly cloudy. Lows in the mid-30s. Winds 10 to 15 miles per hour. Tomorrow, mostly sunny with highs in the lower 60s and light winds. Tomorrow night, partly cloudy, lows in the low 40s. Friday, partly sunny, highs in the mid to upper 50s, winds 15 to 20, gusting up to 40 in the afternoon. And Friday night, mostly cloudy, lows in the mid 40s. Our weather observers around the area yesterday, Jeanette Robinson in Bowler, saw a high of 69, a low of 35, temperature this morning of 51 degrees, 1/100th of an inch of precip. Keith Carson in Bluegrass saw a high yesterday of 66, a low of 37, and a 27-mile-per-hour wind peak. His temperature this morning, 47 degrees. Jason Bossaman in Bartow saw a high yesterday of 69, a low of 29. Temperature this morning of 46 degrees. He had 5/100ths of an inch of precip. And Irwin Berry in Slaty Fork had a high of 65, a low of 39. Temperature this morning, 49 degrees. We thank Highland Telephone Cooperative for their support of Allegheny Mountain Radio. Member-owned, they provide both local and long-distance telephone service, including installation within their service territory. They also offer their members a variety of high-speed Internet services. Located in Monterey, Virginia, their phone number is 540-468-2131, and website is htcnet.org. The Board of Zoning Appeals for Highland County is scheduled for tomorrow, meeting that is scheduled for tomorrow, 5:30 p.m. in the Highland County Modular Conference Center located on Highland Center Drive in Monterey. Highland County Public Schools Education Advisory Committee will meet tomorrow, 6:30 p.m. in the high school library. And the April Planning Commission meeting is scheduled for tomorrow, 7:30 p.m. That's also at the Highland County Modular Conference Building on Highland Center Drive. I do have two funeral announcements for you today. Dreema Dale King Blake, age 87, of Hot Springs, passed away Thursday, April 18th, at Bath Community Hospital. Celebration of Life will be held Sunday, April 28th, at 3 p.m. at Falling Spring Evangelical Presbyterian Church with Pastor Mike Matlack. Friends may call Sunday, April 28th, from 2 to 3 p.m. at the church. Again, that's Dreema Dale King Blake of Hot Springs, who passed away April 18th. Online condolences at McLaughlinandYoung.com. Deborah Lou Roy of Marlinton passed away, age 68 of Marlinton, passed away Friday, April 19th at the Pocahontas Center in Marlinton. Per her wishes, she will be cremated with no service. Again, that's Deborah Lou Ray of Marlinton, who passed away April 19th. Online condolences at LanceFuneralHome.com.
Daily funeral announcements are brought to you by Oba Funeral Home. With locations in both McDowell and Warm Springs, Virginia, they have served families for over 95 years. Information and online obituaries can be found at obafuneralhome.com. They may be reached at 540-839-3451 for their Bath County location and 540-396-3451 for assistance in Highland County.
Stardate, April 24th. Over the millennia, stars acquire a lot of names. Some make sense, some don't. And some of them might have gotten mixed up along the way. An example is the fourth brightest star of Leo, the Lion, which is about 58 light years away. It represents the Lion's Hip. A few centuries ago, it was assigned the name Delta Leonis, an indication of its ranking within the constellation. But it also has some older names, including Zosma and Dur. Zosma comes from ancient Greek. It means the girdle, but that may be a mixed-up version of the original word, which meant hip or back, the star's correct position in the lion's anatomy. Dur comes from ancient Arabic. It's a shortened version of a phrase that means the lion's back. Regardless of the name, Zosma is a pretty impressive star. It's more than twice the size and mass of the sun and about 15 times brighter, and its surface is thousands of degrees hotter. Studies have shown that Zosma could be up to 750 million years old. Stars of its mass burn through their nuclear fuel much faster than stars like the sun. As a result, they live much shorter lives. Zosma should end its prime of life phase and head into old age in a few hundred million years. It'll shine hundreds of times brighter than it does now, giving the lion a brilliant hip. Zosma is high in the sky at nightfall. It's well to the right of Regulus, the lion's brightest star. Our web address is stardate.org. For the University of Texas at Austin McDonald Observatory, I'm Billy Henry.
Stardate comes to you on these stations with the help of the Green Bank Observatory in Green Bank, West Virginia. GBO is a facility of the National Science Foundation.
This is Bird Note. In spring, millions of small ducks move into shallow wetlands of North America. Tidal flats, sedge meadows, rice fields, sloughs, and backwaters. When these flocks of ducks erupt from a flooded field, they reveal a dark body with a blaze of green feathers in the wing. Their voices sound like crickets or tiny frogs. These are green-winged teal, North America's smallest dabbling duck. Just over a foot long and weighing less than a pound. As a dabbling duck, they feed from the water surface by sticking their heads underwater without fully submerging. Around 3 million green-winged teal breed across the northern U.S. and Canada. The male has a cinnamon-brown head with a band of green behind the eye. Both males and females have a green bar on the wing that gleams like an emerald when the sun strikes it. Courtship is elaborate. Males show off with calls and displays, and up to 25 males may court a single female at once. The female selects just one of her many suitors. It's a remarkably competitive courtship ritual that plays out every year. For Bird Note, I'm Ariana Remmel.
On This Day is presented by the Highland Historical Society. Today is April 24th. On this day in 1890, William Harrison, Harvey Simmons, and Ruhama Siren were married by Reverend G.T.D. Collins at Harvey's home. Harvey was the son of Christian and Magdalena Simmons, and Ruhama was the daughter of Abel C. and Mary Ralston Siren. It was Harvey's second marriage, as his first wife had died 2 years before. He had served in Company F, 25th Virginia Infantry, Confederate States Army, and was a farmer in the Bull Pasture Valley, and had served at one time as the overseer of the poor for Somwell District. Harvey and Ruhama had one son before Harvey died in 1897. Ruhama remarried and lived until 1935.
Turning to our sports town crier, the Highland Rams and Lady Rams and Bath Chargers and Lady Chargers, varsity baseball and JV softball teams will play today, 5 p.m. That's at Bath County. Highland Rams and Lady Rams varsity baseball and JV softball teams will play Perry McClure tomorrow, 5 p.m. That's at home. Warrior Boys varsity baseball versus the Tigers Valley Bulldogs tomorrow, 6 p.m. at home. Friday, Warrior Girls softball versus Summers County Bobcats. That's at 5:30 p.m. at home. And next Tuesday, or just Tuesday, Warrior Boys varsity baseball versus the Pendleton County Wildcats, 6 p.m. That's going to be at Pendleton County.
From the Farm Credit Studios, this is On the Farm Radio, rural and agricultural news coming up next. Today's program is made possible by Farm Credit, a nationwide financial cooperative serving agriculture and rural America since 1916. Farm Credit provides loans for farms, homes, land, and agribusiness, coverage in every county in all 50 states. It also includes an educational component called Farm Credit Knowledge Center. Information at farmcredit.com. Equal housing lender, NMLS number 456965.
You're listening to On the Farm Radio with Jeff Ishii.
Are you up for a challenge, specifically an innovation challenge concerning agriculture? Chad Smith has this report.
The American Farm Bureau Federation, in partnership with Farm Credit, is doubling the top prize at this year's Ag Innovation Challenge. Chase Heineman, Director of Industry Affairs for AFBF, talks about the change.
The winner of the 2025 Ag Innovation Challenge will take home $100,000 in funding for their business. And really, the decision to double the prize comes from the realization that everyday entrepreneurs are working to address the challenges facing the agriculture sector. Farm Bureau wants to ensure they have the resources to continue that great work. And so by doubling the prize money, AFBF hopes to double the impact.
He says the challenge is open to anyone with an innovative idea for rural America.
Well, the competition is open to any startup with an innovative business plan or product or service that helps meet the challenges facing America's farmers, ranchers, and rural communities.
Interested entrepreneurs can apply now through June 15th. Go to fb.org/challenge. Chad Smith, Washington.
Our magnificent trees have helped shape the American spirit. Trees that clear the air and protect the land. Thick pine forests, birch trees, and apples. One tree has been selected by the people to represent all of America's trees. The oak, America's national tree. Go to the Arbor Day Foundation website, arborday.org. Learn which oaks or other great American trees are right for planting where you live. Discover the oak, America's national tree. That's arborday.org.
Got a new tech device? Be sure to recycle your old one. The Consumer Electronics Association is making it easy to recycle your old TVs, tablets, and smartphones. Go to greenergadgets.org, type in your zip code, and you'll find the recycling center closest to your home. That's greenergadgets.org.
Today we send out a big old salute to all of our listeners in West Milford, West Virginia. They're tuned in to affiliated radio station WVGV FM 96.7 in beautiful West Milford, West Virginia. Our pearl of wisdom today from listener Neil Alger, who makes a very interesting observation. When you're on your knees, you can't stumble. Thank you, Neil, for that pearl of wisdom. You're on the farm, and I'm Ish.
Support for Allegheny Mountain Radio comes from the Virginia Education Association. Resources for parents and teachers at veanea.org. Because a good education is good for everybody.
Now, the latest from VNN, the Virginia News Network.
A principal in New Kent County faces charges after alcohol was found inside his vehicle. Students reportedly saw an open bottle inside the vehicle of New Kent High School principal Christopher Valderi and told school district officials. The resulting investigation led yesterday to a misdemeanor charge of possessing alcohol on school grounds. Valderi was given a summons and a court date is pending. Richmond's mayor changes his political path.
Richmond Mayor LeVar Stoney is ending his bid to be Virginia's next governor. Stoney announced yesterday that he is dropping out of the race for the Democratic nomination and will instead run for lieutenant governor. In a statement, Stoney said his decision was the right move for the Democratic Party, avoiding an ugly primary fight. Stoney's withdrawal leaves 7th District Congresswoman Abigail Spanberger as the only Democratic candidate for governor. I'm Richard Stelling.
The State Department of Transportation is warning Virginians about a scam involving unpaid tolls. The FBI has reportedly received more than 2,000 reports about the text-based scheme from around the U.S. Scammers will tell potential victims that they owe toll charges and will include a link to a website where the charge can be paid. Authorities warn that using the site can expose sensitive financial information to the scammers. Anyone who's already been a victim should take immediate action to protect personal information, including disputing any unauthorized financial transactions. In the event of a storm, your phone can be a lifesaver. That's what a local Red Cross official says as the organization tries to prevent more drowning deaths. A 15-year-old drowned Sunday in Swift Creek in Chesterfield County. Jonathan McNamara is communications director of the Red Cross's Richmond Division. He says your phone can alert you in the event of severe weather or changes that could impact safety on the water. He also says the teen's death should be a reminder for parents to supervise their kids. McNamara tells 8 News parents should discuss water safety even before heading to the water. I'm Rebecca Hughes.
This is VNN, the Virginia News Network.
It's Wednesday. You've made it over the hump, but you feel a little frayed around the edges. The Duke of Jazz has just what you need to take the hectic out of your week. The Duke, Pete Petard, brings you 4 hours of smooth jazz on Lights Out Jazz. Wednesdays from 6 to 10 p.m. on Allegheny Mountain Radio's FM network. Pete plays the best of smooth jazz this side of the Eastern Seaboard. Sit back, relax, and let Pete do the work of soothing and smoothing out your work week. You'll feel better just by tuning in to Lights Out Jazz, Wednesday from 6 to 10 p.m. on the FM side of Allegheny Mountain Radio and online at AlleghenyMountainRadio.org.
So I'm not going to do the whole Beatles intro today because we don't have any local birthdays. If it is your birthday, happy birthday to you. You share it with actress Shirley MacLaine, detective novel author Sue Grafton, who wrote A is for Alibi, among other things, singer Barbara Streisand, comedian Cedric the Entertainer, singer Kelly Clarkson, and fashion designer Jean-Paul Gaultier. Pronouncing that word makes me miss Aaron, who would have pronounced it, of course, Gaultier.
You're listening to The Jesters with a Decca recording from 1944, and you're on the Soundbeat.
Come all you rounders if you want to hear a story all about a brave engineer. Casey Jones was the rounder's name. On a 6-8-wheeler, boys, he won his fame.
Casey Jones's tale is one of the most popular in folk history. Railroads were the nation's backbone at the time, and schedules were of the utmost importance. The engineer set out an hour and a half behind schedule in the wee hours of April 30th, 1900. He was determined to make up the time from Memphis to Canton, Mississippi, and had just about done so a couple miles outside of Vaughan. But two trains were already taking up the passing tracks at the station, with cars left out on the main line. Jones, somewhat miraculously, slowed the train's 75-mile-per-hour speed to 35 at the time of collision. He was killed in the impact, his being the only fatality, preventing many more.
Casey Jones, mounted to the cabin. Casey Jones, his orders in his hand. Casey Jones, mounted to the cabin, took his farewell trip to the promised land.
Soundbeat is produced at the Belfer Audio Archive, Syracuse University Library. I'm Brett Barry.
for StoryCorps' Military Voices Initiative, recording and sharing the stories of service members and their families. Today, we'll hear from Yvonne Powell and her brother, 65-year-old Master Sergeant Alvy Powell, Jr., who at the time of his retirement in 2017 had a special distinction. Master Sergeant Powell didn't carry a weapon in the Army. His job was to sing at some of our nation's most decorated institutions. He first joined the U.S. Army Chorus in 1983 and re-enlisted in 2001. He sat down for StoryCorps with his sister, the person who inspired him to sing.
I started singing because of you. The way you sang, the beauty of your voice, it made me stop whatever I was doing.
My favorite memory is us singing in church. I like your voice. Always did. And you pursued your singing.
Yeah. And I remember I was singing in a dinner theater, and one of the men in the orchestra approached me and said, there's an opening in the soldiers' chorus. And I said to him, you mean join the Army? No, thank you. That same week, I was with my voice teacher, Mr. George Shirley, and he said, you should go to the one that I was in. And I said, you in the Army? He said, oh, yeah, the United States Army Chorus. That was my entrance. I knew nothing about musicians being in the Army, but that was the job, just to sing.
And I was thinking, thank the Lord he's not going out to battle, mm-hmm. You know?
But we are probably one of the military's secret weapons. The Army Chorus would be entertaining generals from different countries, and sometimes the negotiations weren't going very well. And the Army Chorus would come in and sing something from those people's native country in their native tongue. And all of a sudden, you could see the faces light up and they would start to smile.
And remember, I asked you, are you nervous sometimes when you get ready to sing? And you said, that's a part of it.
If I don't have little butterflies, something's not right.
Mm-hmm.
When I sang the inauguration for George H.W. Bush,
let us all be grateful.
I remember to this day walking down the aisle and standing in front of that podium and seeing what felt like close to a million people standing out there. And yes, I was nervous. But after a while, you learn to channel the butterflies. And that's what I did. How did you feel the second time I enlisted and went back?
I was glad that you went back. I know there was something that you love, which is singing.
I had no idea that I would be able to have the kind of success musically. And when I say success, what I mean is the ability to keep a roof over my head and do nothing but sing. To me, that's success. But I don't think that I would have taken this path had it not been for you.
Well, you're welcome, my brother.
That was Alvy Powell, who at the time of his retirement in 2017 was the oldest enlisted soldier in the Army, and his sister Yvonne Powell for StoryCorps.
Hello, I'm Chuck Nida, Chief Engineer for Allegheny Mountain Radio. It's that time of the year when the weather does weird things to AMR's FM signals. Specifically, various weather features create phenomena such as tropospheric ducting, making it possible for signals far away from here to come booming in, covering up AMR's FM signals. The problem was worse in those areas where AMR's FM signal is marginal, making it easy for those so-called skip signals to come in and override AMR programming. Our sole AM station, WVMR at 1370, is also affected by weather, but in completely different ways. Thunderstorms many miles away create that familiar crackle so often heard during the summertime on AM radio. There's not much we can do about it except ride it out and wait for it to go away. If you have access to the internet, you can always listen to our audio stream. Just go to www.AlleghenyMountainRadio.org and click on the Listen Live button.
We thank Rockingham Cooperative for supporting the Highland FFA report on Allegheny Mountain Radio. Located next to the VDOT in Monterey, they are open Monday through Friday from 7:30 to 5 and Saturday 7:30 to noon. They offer hardware, livestock handling equipment, feed, and animal health products. Their number is 540-468-2450.
Here's today's edition of Health in a Heartbeat. It's that time of year when allergies annoy the millions of us who suffer. We sniffle, sneeze, and bemoan the pollen that seems to be everywhere. For those who have seen an allergist to help pinpoint the exact cause for their woes through blood or skin tests, there are a couple of typical treatments. First, there are allergy shots. They've been around since the start of the 20th century. A series of shots are injected into the fat under the skin, and each time the patient is given larger amounts of the bothersome allergen. Over time, the allergy symptoms tend to improve. Sublingual immunotherapy is newer. In this treatment, a patient places a tablet with the allergen under their tongue and then swallows it after a couple of minutes. The idea is the same, increasing exposure to the troubling substance. Four tablets are FDA approved to combat allergies to some grasses, ragweed, and dust mites. Those of us who are bothered but not debilitated by allergies can use over-the-counter treatments and take other steps. A nasal rinse using purified water with saline can help keep your snoot clear of mucus and allergens. Nose sprays can treat swelling and inflammation, and antihistamine sprays are available. The Asthma and Allergy Foundation of America suggests limiting outdoor activities when pollen counts are highest. Shower daily before bed. Wash your bedding once a week in hot, soapy water. Wear sunglasses and cover your hair when outdoors, and wipe down furry family members before they come in from outside. I know that with roughly 1 in 4 adults in the United States dealing with allergies, at least you've got company. Health in a Heartbeat is produced by University of Florida Health, committed to advancing excellence in patient care, research, and education, and by WUFTFM. Our medical advisors include University of Florida College of Medicine faculty members who provide the latest information in health research and patient care. Visit us at heartbeatradio.org.
Self-heating concrete. I'm Randy Simon, and this is Earthwise, a look at our changing environment. States in the colder parts of the country spend an estimated $2.3 billion a year on snow and ice removal, as well as untold millions on repairing roadways damaged by winter weather. Researchers at Drexel University have been researching a way to extend the service life of concrete surfaces like roadways and to help them maintain a surface temperature above freezing during the winter. Preventing freezing and thawing as temperatures go up and down and reducing the amount of plowing and salting is a desirable goal. The Drexel team has developed a cold weather resilient concrete mix that is capable of melting snow on its own, using only the thermal energy in the environment and not requiring salt, shoveling, or heating systems. The system uses low temperature liquid paraffin that turns from its room temperature liquid state into a solid when temperatures go down. Incorporating the liquid paraffin into concrete triggers heating when temperatures drop due to the energy released by the phase change. Tests on slabs of the concrete on the Drexel campus over the past 2 years recorded 32 freeze-thaw events. The special slabs maintained a surface temperature between 42 and 55 degrees for up to 10 hours when air temperatures dipped below freezing. The heating is enough to melt a couple of inches of snow at a rate of a quarter inch an hour. It's not enough to melt a heavy snow event before plows are needed, but it can help de-ice road surfaces and increase transportation safety. And simply preventing the surface from freezing, thawing, and refreezing can go a long way toward preventing deterioration. It is promising research toward reducing an ongoing problem in colder climates. Earthwise is a production of WAMC. Find us on social media at WAMC Radio and listen anytime at WAMCpodcasts.org.
The Monongahela National Forest covers approximately one-third of Pocahontas County, and most of our communities are within its boundaries. The Mon Forest Towns Partnership was formed to cultivate relations across lands and forest gateway communities to enhance the recreation economy and quality of life for residents and visitors while sustaining the quality of the environment. More information is available at monforesttowns.com. Pocahontas County, Nature's Mountain Playground.
The thermometer has stayed stuck on 59 degrees in Monterey. Mostly sunny today, highs in the upper 50s to low 60s. Winds 10 to 15, gusts up to 30. Tonight, partly cloudy, lows in the mid-30s, winds 10 to 15. Tomorrow, mostly sunny, highs in the lower 60s with light winds. And tomorrow night, partly cloudy, lows in the low 40s. Friday looks partly sunny, highs in the mid to upper 50s, winds 15 to 20, gusting up to 40 in the afternoon. And Friday night looks mostly cloudy, lows in the mid-40s. Our weather observers around the area yesterday, Jeanette Robinson in Bowler, saw a high of 69, a low of 35, temperature this morning of 51 degrees, 1/100th of an inch of rain. Keith Carson in Bluegrass saw a high yesterday of 66, a low of 37, and a 25-mile-per-hour peak wind gust. His temperature this morning, 47 degrees. Jason Bosserman in Bartow saw a high yesterday of 69, a low of 29, temperature this morning of 46, 5/100ths of an inch of precip. And Irwin Berry in Slaty Fork saw a high yesterday of 65, low of 39, morning temperature 49.
Did you know that when older adults share a meal with others, we're more likely to get the nutrition and social connection we need? That's why Valley Program for Aging Services is inviting all adults 60 and over to join us at a VPass Cafe. Cafes are located in Warm Springs each Thursday and in Hot Springs each Wednesday of the month. You'll enjoy a delicious meal, social activities, and new friends. There's no cost to participate. To make your reservation, 540-468-2178.
The Highland County Recycling Trailer is at the Stonewall Ruritan Building Friday through Sunday. Windy Cove Presbyterian Church kicks off their 275th, that's a long time, anniversary celebration Friday, 6:30 p.m. at the church with a piano viola concert featuring musicians from Garth Newell. All are welcome. A reception will follow. As you'll hear on a news story, the Great Greenbrier River Race will be Saturday, 11 a.m., beginning on Main Street in Marlinton. An intro to birding walk is at the Greenback Public Library Saturday, 10 a.m. to noon. Binoculars are limited, so please bring your own if you can. For more information or to register, 304-456-4507. Rain date is set for May 4th. And Zuzu's Hot Five brings traditional 1920s jazz to the Pocahontas Opera House Saturday beginning at 7:30 p.m. There is a fee for those over 17. More information, 304-799-6645. I mentioned a news story about the Greenbrier River Race that comes up in the midst of another listen to all of today's local news stories.
Pocahontas County Commissioners held a special session on Thursday, April the 18th, meeting with members of the Pocahontas County Solid Waste Authority and with members of the Fertig family regarding the purchase of the county landfill, which the Solid Waste Authority has been leasing from Renee Heretic Hill. The Solid Waste Authority members and the commissioners both agreed that after the landfill reaches its capacity and closes in about 2 years, the authority will financially need the commission to purchase the landfill in order to be able to continue to provide trash disposal using a transfer station built on that site. Fertig Hill and the commissioners agreed that $129,900 would be a fair price for the landfill. And both parties agreed that the recently surveyed boundaries of the 40.6 acres were acceptable. The remaining issue was who would pay to build the fence around the three sides of the 40.6-acre tract, which is required by the West Virginia Department of the Environment, or DOE, as well as another fence to run on both sides of the one-half-mile-long roadway through the Fertig Farm to the site. Fertig Hill and her relatives said that fence along the state-maintained roadway is absolutely needed to protect her cattle from the vehicular traffic that will be traveling to and from the transfer station. It was determined that the fence around the landfill property will cost $24,307.50. And an additional $19,900 will be required to construct a fence along both sides of the roadway. Commissioner Walker was willing to pay Fertig Hill $24,307.50 for her to build the fence around the landfill by adding that amount to the purchase price, but he insisted that the Solid Waste Authority pay for the fence along the roadway. The commissioners voted to pay Fertig Hill $129,900 for the property, plus the $24,307.50 for her to have the fence built around the landfill property, for a total of $154,207.50. The commissioner said it is easier for Fertig Hill to build that fence than for the commission to have to go through the complicated process of bidding that job out. Ed Raleigh, chairman of the Solid Waste Authority, said they had already offered to build the fence along one side of the road if Fertig Hill would build the fence along the other side of the road, but the authority will still need to formally approve that at their next meeting. Fertig Hill indicated that the commission's offer appears to be acceptable to her. Regarding the post-closure cost of monitoring the water at the landfill and of maintaining the cap for 30 years, Mary Clendenin said they have revised down the estimated annual cost of that from $75,000 per year to $50,000. The commissioners indicated they might also be willing to help with that cost, as well as with some of the future costs operating the transfer station, since it is in the best interests of the citizens of the county that the cost of garbage disposal remain as reasonable as possible. Tim Walker, Allegheny Mountain Radio News.
If you are wanting to participate in this year's Great Greenbrier River Race, I'm afraid you're too late. According to the race website, as registration has already closed for the race scheduled for April 27th. But if you're just wanting to watch a fantastic race with highly competitive athletes, you're more than welcome to take in the festive atmosphere that will be happening in Marlinton this Saturday. Race organizer Robin DeMarkey gives us a rundown of the course for the race, which includes running, kayaking, and biking.
They start in front of the Presbyterian Church there on 8th Avenue. We have a timing company that comes and brings a big arch, and everything's done electronically. And they run up to the trail, and they take a left on the trail, which will be heading north towards Calf. And they run a mile and a half, turn around, and come back. So it's a three-mile run.
If you're a solo racer, you can proceed directly to the next phase of the race, a four-mile kayak paddle down to Buckeye.
If you're on a team, they exchange the ankle bracelet there in front of the Presbyterian Church, and then they go to their kayaks, which is very cool for people to watch because there'll be 270 kayaks lined up there. And then they head to Buckeye, and then they get out at Buckeye, and they have their bike stationed at Buckeye. They head south on the trail for 3 miles, turn around and come back into town, and it's a 10-mile bike ride.
Despite recent rains, DeMarkey says the kayak portion of the race could be challenging.
It'll be tricky. There'll be some rocks to avoid because it's probably going to be under 3 feet.
What's the optimum level?
You know, it can just vary. I mean, we've had it at 2.5, which is barely doable. I think one year we did it at 6 feet, and that was extremely fast. If I could wish for everybody, what it would probably be 3.5 or 4 feet.
Spectators have a chance to join the racers for dinner Friday night before the big race.
This year, Rivertown, the cafe, is hosting a pasta dinner, which the community can come to if they want to. It's $16 at the door. And then we're having a band that night, Soda Pop Gypsies. Okay. The pasta dinner's from 5 to 7, and then Soda Pop starts, and they're from 7 to 9.
Over 370 racers are registered to participate in this year's race. Proceeds from the Great Greenbrier River Race benefit the Greenbrier River Trail Association for maintenance and repair of the trail. The meeting for racers is at 10:30 a.m. Saturday, and the Great Greenbrier River Race will begin at 11 a.m. For Allegheny Mountain Radio News, I'm Heather Nyday.
This is Britt Chambers with an Allegheny Mountain Radio News Nugget. Attorney for the Highland County Volunteer Rescue Squad, Jordan K. Bowman, Esquire, of Litton and Sipe in Harrisonburg, released the following statement to local media on April 23, 2024. Quote, "For over 60 years, the members of the Highland County Volunteer Rescue Squad have been honored to provide emergency medical services throughout the county. The volunteers were extremely disappointed with the action by the Board of Supervisors on April 11th, revoking their authority to operate in the county. The board violated state law concerning the regulation of emergency medical services and failed to provide the community with a meaningful opportunity to provide input before taking action. Earlier today, the volunteers filed a lawsuit requesting that the board's decision be declared void due to numerous legal deficiencies. The volunteers have also asked for a preliminary injunction that will allow them to resume operations while the lawsuit is pending. Otherwise, the emergency medical services available in the county will likely be insufficient in circumstances where a slight delay may mean the difference between life and death. Over the course of a half century, the volunteers have formed valued relationships from helping friends and neighbors who suddenly find themselves in a time of urgent need. The volunteers hope that today's filings represent the first step towards resuming a vital role in the community that has spanned generations." End quote.
West Virginia Metro News, I'm Chris Lawrence. Look for State Attorney General Patrick Morrissey to announce next hour the next step his office will be taking in an appeals court ruling on the state's transgender sports law. Metro News statewide correspondent Brad McElhaney.
I anticipate it to be the route the state is taking for an appeal. There is no guaranteed appeal at this point, but there are a couple of things the state could do.
That announcement at 1:15 this afternoon. There may be a viable option for the recently idled tin mill in Weirton.
Cleveland-Cliffs Chairman, President, and CEO Lorenzo Gonzalez publicly announcing this week that talks are underway to possibly transform the company's tin mill plant in Weirton to a plant that would make steel for electric grid transformers. If it happens in Weirton, it would be a major save for the plant and has more than 900 workers that idled operations just last Saturday. Cleveland-Cliffs closed it down because it lost all of its customers because of steel dumping from foreign countries. Steel Workers Union Local 2911 President Mark Liptis says there's reason for optimism.
It's not a done deal, but it's in its infancy. However, the progress is being made.
Liptis says there would have to be a certain amount of lead time to convert the plant with sophisticated equipment that produces steel used in transformers.
That's Jeff Jenkins. U.S. Senators Joe Manchin and Shelley Moore Capito were yes votes on the $95 billion foreign aid package that passed the Senate last night. You're listening to Metro News, the voice of West Virginia.
Ready to get on the road to good health? Valley Program for Aging Services is now offering transportation to and from medical appointments for adults 60 years of age and older in Bath County. Rides are offered Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 2:30 p.m. based on availability. If you have an appointment within a 75-mile radius of Hot Springs, you may schedule your appointment with Harmony Leonard at 540-468-2178.
That's going to do it for Noon Hour Magazine, but stick around. I anticipate the youngins from the Highland County Mid-Kids Radio Club shortly.